Welcome, everyone, to episode 407 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we have a lot to go over. We're going to talk about the All-Star reserves who were announced last night. We will hit on DeMarcus Cousins' future now that he will no longer be a member of the Houston Rockets. We'll talk about Kristaps Porzingis, who may be on the trade block. And we will wrap it up with a discussion of the Minnesota Timberwolves' decision to fire Ryan Saunders and hire a new coach immediately. Before we get into that, a reminder, you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And we're recording our show today on Locker Room, the only live audio social network for sports fans. Listen to our show on Locker Room before it hits your iTunes feed. Engage with us in real time or start your own room to react to the draft, trade news, and more. Take the mic and download Locker Room in the Apple App Store. Joining me today is a man who must feel vindicated that Zach LaVine is an all-star. Morten Jensen, how's it going?
It's going well. It means I don't have to riot. So that's always a good thing, to not riot.
That is a very good thing. So I'm happy for you and separately Bulls fans, making that delineation very clear here.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. So All-Star reserves were announced last night. You know, I think when we discussed these last week, we said the West was going to be more predictable than the East, right? It was going to be like Anthony Davis, even though he's injured and is going to miss the game. Damian Lillard was a lock. Rudy Gobert, Donovan Mitchell, Paul George, all locks. And then we figured Zion was going to get in. And, that left one spot plus the injury replacement for AD.
Right.
So we both thought it would be Devin Booker. It ended up being Chris Paul, but you got to figure Devin Booker's probably going to get the AD spot anyway. So no harm, no foul there. The East was just going to be a lot more unpredictable. We figured
yes,
Harden was in, the two Celtics, Tatum and Brown, were in. We both thought Bam Adebayo was going to be in, and he was not. And then it was just like a mess of, realistically, probably 10 candidates you could make a case for, but none of them were so overwhelmingly favored over the others that, like, you know, those last three spots were always going to be somewhat controversial, or I guess last four spots. So the guys who ended up getting in are Zach LaVine, Julius Randle of the Knicks, Ben Simmons of the Sixers, and Nikola Vucevic of the Orlando Magic. So what did you think of the East selections in particular?
No, I think it actually proves just how the East have improved over the past couple of years. No, I mean, remember a couple of years back when the West was just so much stronger that you almost had a really tough assignment filling out an all-star list for the Eastern Conference?
Yeah.
Like, that's no longer the case. You have just so much talent in the East, and I'll actually have a video on this up at the NBA show on YouTube in about 45 minutes. But no, I mean, it just goes to speak to, you know, Trae Young didn't make it, Sabonis didn't make it, Bam Adebayo didn't make it, Chris Middleton didn't make it, Tobias Harris, Fred VanVleet. You know, there's so many guys who are having seasons in the Eastern Conference who are deserving of being selected to the All-Star game who weren't. And I think that bodes well for the NBA, and it's just another feather in the cap of us arguing for expanding the All-Star rosters, honestly.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, I think that's the overall lesson, is that we need to go to 15, because the West, I think there are fewer egregious snubs. Like, there were guys who you could make a case for, but I think they overall chose pretty much the right guys to get in. But again, the East, there were just so many guys. Even if you expand to 15, there's still going to be snubs. Like, yeah. You know, I saw people making the point last night, like, all right, we need to expand to 15, and I agree, but that's not going to end the snub discussion. That's just going to bump it from who was the 13th best player to who was the 16th best player, and, you know, expand the list to 15 this year, and still one of Bam, Middleton, Sabonis, and Trae Young is left out.
Yeah.
Not to mention Tobias Harris, Fred VanVleet, Jeremy Grant, Colin Sexton, Gordon Hayward. Like, there were a lot of guys having all-star caliber seasons this year. So someone was always going to get a little butthurt about this. But were there any selections that really surprised you in either conference?
I mean, Julius Randle over Bam Adebayo did surprise me.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, I like what Randle is doing. And again, he's deserving. Like, I can't say that he's not, but I thought Bam was probably slightly more deserving. That said, the Heat just haven't gotten out to the start that you would expect of this season, I think. Mm-hmm. So expectations drew in, which opens up another question, Brian, is how much should team success, especially in a year like this, factor in? Or should it at all, given that the All-Star game is primarily just a show game?
It's a great question, especially for this year, because I agree. I think team success is what kept Adebayo out of this, because otherwise, I mean, we talked about this last episode. He's putting up better numbers than he did last year when he was an All-Star. He's more productive this year, and he's basically the only reason the Heat aren't competing with the Pistons for the worst record in the Eastern Conference right now. Like, they have just gotten so devastated by injuries and by COVID that, you know, especially in this year where players are getting COVID or are being forced to miss a week to quarantine, how much should we be holding team success against a team like Miami that's just dealt with, you know, a lot of the roster that went to the finals last year just hasn't been available for all that much time. I mean, Jimmy Butler is an all-star caliber player when he's healthy, and he's been playing at an all-star level, but he got COVID, missed a couple weeks, and, you know, just hasn't played enough games to get into the all-star game. So I can, I can understand that, but it does feel a little gross to hold team success against a player this year of all years, just because these factors are so outside of his control that, I mean, I guess the counter argument would be like, all right, well then Bam Adebayo is just like a good stats, bad team guy. But I think anyone with eyes would know that's not the case.
Correct. Yes. And ultimately, this is what it boils down to, right? Individual accomplishments, because it's an all-star thing. If it goes into team success, I think it's just such a weird approach, right? Because team success is exactly that, a team accomplishment. And then you reward someone individually for his part in that team accomplishment. But then you can just look at what... Then we go back to the whole MVP discussion in like most valuable, right? Mm-hmm. Because if a guy is on a bad team, but let's say a team has won maybe 12 games so far in the season or something like that. Okay. You could say that's a bad start, that he isn't, you know, quote-unquote deserving. But what if the presence of that guy is the entire reason that they have 12 wins instead of 2?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that enough of an individual accomplishment that he should be warranted an all-star selection?
Well, and I think that's what got Nikola Vucevic selected, because the Magic are even worse record-wise than the Miami Heat. They're 13-19, fourth worst record in the East. But again, injuries have really contributed to their downswing. You know, Markel Fultz tears his ACL early in the year. Cole Anthony is now out with a hip injury. Jonathan Isaac is out all year with, I believe it was an ACL as well. So it's not Vooch's fault that the Magic suck. There, you know, there's nothing he could do more than he's already doing. He's averaging a career high, almost 24 points a game, shooting 48 from the field, almost 40% from three on the highest volume of his career. He's playing really well, and I'm glad to see him get the nod for and be rewarded for how well he's playing despite his team's struggles. But yeah, it's hard to say if, you know, if you're taking team success in, then Vucevic, despite his individual production, should not be in. But if you're not taking team success in, then why is Bam Adebayo not in the game? Like, where is the line drawn between individual production versus team success? And based on some of these selections, I don't have a good sense for that.
Right. No, I think that's That's what we need to have a discussion about at some point. You know me, I'm always challenging the status quo when it comes to NBA awards, and I think next up has to be the All-Star game. Because it almost feels like that ever since the 60s or whenever, the NBA just decided, you know what, let's just stick with what works, without really taking into account that it may not longer work to the same extent that it did 50 or 60 years ago.
Right. Right. I mean, how do you justify the Milwaukee Bucks, who have the number 3 seed and are significantly ahead of 4, 5, 6? They have one All-Star. Neither the Pacers nor Raptors have any All-Stars. The Celtics have 2. The Knicks have 1. The Bulls have 1. You know, the Magic at the 12th seed in the East have 1. Bradley Beal, the 13th seed on the Wizards, is a starter. So, again, where is the line drawn between we're going to reward team success, even though these guys aren't putting up as big of individual statistics, versus, you know, we're just going to reward the guys putting up the biggest numbers? And I know Doc Rivers has been hammering this point, because he was really campaigning for Tobias Harris not to get in. He's very bummed that Tobias did not get in. But, you know, I wrote a thing for Forbes where it's like, if you look at his numbers individually, it's hard to make his case over a Julius Randle or a Zach LaVine. So I can understand why he got left out. But Doc is saying, like, look, Tobias could go on a bad team and put up 25 or 30 points, but, you know, he's averaging what he's averaging. He's averaging it efficiently, and he's contributing to winning basketball. He's contributing to, right now, the number one seed in the East. So, yeah, I think you're totally right here. The selection criteria just need to be more clearly defined. Or, you know, I know people have been asking coaches over the last week on these Zoom pressers, like, what do you take into account when you're evaluating who should be an All-Star? And it sounds like, you know, Doc admitted last night he was calling other coaches to lobby for Ben and Tobias. Like, it sounds like there is some politicking going on between them. But I would guess it's just, for the coaches in particular, it's probably who is the hardest to match up against. Like, when we are game planning against this guy, who do we have to really focus our entire game plan on? And I think that's where, you know, a Chris Middleton or a Tobias Harris, even though I think those guys are both deserving of All-Star cases, I don't think teams are developing game plans to stop them. They're focused on Giannis or Embiid or Simmons, and, you know, they'll let Middleton or Tobias beat them if that's the case. Same with a Fred VanVleet, for instance. Like, teams are more focused on Kyle Lowry, Pascal Siakam.
Right, right. Yeah, the secondary player is probably a tough sell this year.
Yeah, yeah. What did you think of Booker not getting in?
Yeah, that surprised me. I if anything, I would have wanted Booker in over CP, because I think this is mostly narrative-driven. Mm-hmm. Chris Paul comes in and suddenly the Suns find themselves as being really good. Well, that was always the plan. But the star of the show is still Devin Booker, and he really came onto the scene over the past couple weeks. So I think it was a little bit of one of those, oh, we love Chris for all he's done, so let's get him in there. And I'm not saying that he isn't an extremely good player. And hell, you know, All-Star worthy in his own right, maybe. But if I had to choose one of them, I would have gone Booker.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think if the Suns hadn't shown what they showed in the bubble, and then Chris Paul comes in and they look like a totally different team, that would be one thing. But
right,
we had seen the signs of the Suns are starting to figure this thing out and put it together. I don't know. Chris Paul 100% deserves a lot of credit for that. I don't want to take away from Chris Paul. But I agree with you. You know, we just had the conversation. Who are you game planning against? Is it Chris Paul or Devin Booker? It's Devin Booker.
Yeah.
But,
well, probably both, but more so definitely Devin Booker, just because, you know, you have to stop the offense. And one thing is, Chris, while a great facilitator, he's not the scorer that he used to be. I mean, if let's say Booker went out for an extended period of time, would you be able to give Chris Paul the ball and go, we need 27 points out of your ass every single game over the next 3 weeks?
Right, right, right. All right, well, that's enough All-Star talk for now. Let's move on more to a former All-Star who is now looking for a new team. The Houston Rockets waived DeMarcus Cousins on Tuesday. According to Tim McMahon, it was a mutual decision to part ways. McMahon reports Cousins was not happy with his role as a backup center behind Christian Wood, wanting more playing time. Rockets head coach Steven Silas did not consider playing Wood and Cousins together as he wants to use Wood solely as a center. So the first thing I want to address quickly, because I saw when this news first started to leak out, I think Shams had it last week, about them being willing to waive Cousins. It was the day after they fully guaranteed his contract for the season, and I saw some people dunking on the Rockets for that. Like, what's the rationale behind waiving him a day after you guarantee the contract? I don't think they arrived at those decisions independently. Like, I'm pretty sure they knew they were going to waive him, but they guaranteed the contract in good faith and to curry favor with his agent and to kind of start to repair their image around the league, because I think especially when a guy like James Harden requests out, that does not send a good message to other players about wanting to come to Houston. And especially when you get rid of, you know, a longtime fixture in the front office in Daryl Morey, and you lose a head coach in Mike D'Antoni, there's just a lot of upheaval with that franchise. So as fun as it is to get jokes off about the Rockets, I think it was actually smart of them to guarantee Boogie's contract before they were going to release him. What do you think?
Yep, I would agree.
Yeah. That said, so now he's going to be, I think teams can claim him until Thursday and he'll otherwise be a free agent. He's played 25 games this season, Mort. He's averaging 9.6 points, 7.6 rebounds, shooting only 37.6% from the field. Where do you think he would make sense if he doesn't get claimed?
Well, I mean, the Brooklyn Nets need size, and I lobbed that to the timeline the other day, and people were like, why? And also pointing out the relationship with James Harden.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing. I think if you're close to a title, which they could be, don't you just basically say, well, screw whatever issue I had with that guy if it makes me closer to the championship? I mean, we saw how Dwight Howard and the Lakers, who had a pretty bad falling out, return and go, you know, let's just move on. And then they actually won the championship. So I just wouldn't be opposed to it if I'm the Nets or if I'm Cousins. And I know he's not the player that he used to be. I know defensively he'll get killed in pick and roll coverage.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like him as a guy you can go to in a half court setting where the ball is spread out, because he's actually a good passer. I think that's something we really seem to be forgetting when we're talking about DeMarcus Cousins. The year that he went down, he was averaging 5.5 assists per mm-hmm. game. Like, he's a really good player, he's that too, but a really good passer, I should say. So if you put him in the post or the elbow or whatever, and you have Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and James Harden moving off of that action, are you going to tell me that you couldn't use DeMarcus Cousins' passing and his 270-pound frame to clock up some space inside and at least draw a defender away? No, I think that could work. I think schemes-wise, it makes sense. On a fast break opportunities, he doesn't even have to cross half court. Like, just let KD, Kyrie, and James handle that, and then just stay home and save your energy. I think it works. I think it's a place where he won't have too big a workload, where he won't have too much of a responsibility. He can pick his spots probably better than any other team he would go to. So why not?
Yeah, no, I'm right with you. I don't see the harm. Because if it doesn't work out, just don't play him or just cut him. But if it does work out, he's going to be the highest upside guy probably on the buyout market. With all due respect to, like, Trevor Ariza or Nemanja Bjelica if he gets waived. Cousins is definitely not his former all-star self. He is certainly a step slower defensively than he was in his prime. So you're not going to want, you know, if the playing time was an issue in Houston, I think that would be my biggest concern for whichever team signs him, because I don't think you want to sign him as your starting center playing 30 plus minutes a game. I just don't think that's the role for him at this point in his career, and given all the injuries. If you can have him for 10 or 15 minutes off the bench to give you a different look, that's where I think he could have value. And especially for a Nets team, you know, you have DeAndre Jordan, who is very limited offensively in what he can do. He's not going to shoot threes. He's not going to take jumpers at all, really. He's just going to do, you know, putbacks off of offensive rebounds, catch some lobs from James Harden. That's about it. So I think Cousins coming off the bench can give you that more of a versatile big man. I know they have Jeff Green at the five, who they've been playing as well in small ball lineups, and that lineup is deadly in terms of efficiency. But then Cousins can kind of bridge the gap between the two, where he can be the offensively versatile guy at center, but he can be give you a little bit more muscle in the paint. So if you're going against a guy like Joel Embiid in a 7-game series, and DeAndre Jordan picks up 2 cheap fouls right away, you at least have Cousins to eat up another 6 fouls instead of, oh crap, now we have to defend Joel Embiid with Jeff Green for the next 16 minutes in the first half.
Right, exactly. And like, even though Cousins isn't a great defender, that's where his size just matters. Because you would want someone of his caliber to guard, you know, the bigger players. You don't want Jeff Green going up against Joel Embiid. You would want that to be Cousins just off of the size and the strength argument alone. So I think there is merit in having him on there. You know, other candidates could be the Lakers. I'm not really sure what he would be doing there, if he would get the minutes or, you know, whatever. He signed there last year, didn't even play a single minute. So, you know, it might be one of those situations where, oh, let's see what we actually had there. I don't know, but ultimately, we're spending a lot of time talking about a guy who is roughly average at this stage of his career.
Yeah, I mean, the Lakers, I've seen multiple reports saying they wouldn't be interested in a reunion, which I'm kind of surprised by, honestly. And again, maybe it's just a matter of, you know, they were around him last year, so maybe they got a sense of, like, when this guy's healthy, he expects X number of minutes in between Marc Gasol and Montrezl Harrell and Anthony Davis. We don't have the ability to offer him what he wants, but, you know, with Anthony Davis banged up right now and he's out for the next 4 weeks, you could at least sign DeMarcus Cousins as just like a minute eater for the time being. You don't have to play him a ton in the playoffs if you think Gasol and Harrell, if you correctly think Gasol and Harrell will give you a better chance to win. But you have to make it through the next 40-some games, and you don't want LeBron James to continue playing 38 minutes a night like he's been doing over the past few weeks. So if, you know, if you can bring in DeMarcus as just a way to eat a couple minutes and stay afloat without LeBron, that's an option. What about the Warriors? Because he was with them for a bit in the
30 games.
Yeah, in the 18-19 season. They are also really banged up in the front court. And, you know, they've taken flyers on guys like Andrew Wiggins and have somewhat resuscitated his value. So what would you think about a Cousins-Warriors reunion?
I mean, I wouldn't hate it. I wonder what the fit would be like. I mean, James Wiseman obviously is not to that point where you are throwing him out there for, you know, 30-plus minutes. I also think, is he still injured or is he back?
I think he came back last night, yeah.
Yeah, okay. But it's like he's just not ready yet, so you can definitely squeeze out some minutes at the big position there. You may also have to sacrifice some Draymond minutes at center, but that doesn't really matter because he's still more of a ball handler. Like, yeah, I could see it, and given that he knows the system a little bit and has been around those guys, there won't be like that acclimation period as well. So I guess why not?
Yeah, that's where I am too with a lot of these teams. It's if you're afraid of, again, I think that the big concern beyond his injury history is his expectations for playing time and if he's going to be disgruntled if he doesn't play X number of minutes. So maybe bring him on a non-guaranteed deal, or like push the guarantee to later in the season so you can at least see how this thing works out before you decide whether to guarantee his contract.
Right.
You know, I don't know. I don't think he's not an NBA player anymore. I don't think he's the all-star caliber player that he was in his prime, but I think he could help a team in a limited role.
Yeah. No, are we really reaching that point where we're arguing that he's not an NBA player? Of course he is.
I think so. I mean, based on the reaction from, you know, a lot of people who we respect in the NBA Twitter community, it just seems like the reaction to his release was, you know, some people start speculating about possible landing spots. It was like, all right, well, how does he help these teams at all? And I can understand that concern defensively, but I think there is a role for him in certain matchups or in limited minutes. Like, I don't think he's a complete net minus no matter what situation or role that you play him in.
I would agree with that, yes.
What about Boston or Toronto, both of whom seem to need some front court help? Toronto has really started to right the ship. They got, you know, got off to a 2-8 start. They're now back to 500. And just the last two games against Philly, I have not seen a single team get Joel Embiid as frustrated as the Toronto Raptors did over the last two games. So do you think they should actually be okay riding with Baines and Boucher moving forward?
I think you can add some depth. It comes back to what you said earlier, I think, in terms of how many minutes you're looking at for DeMarcus, right? Because you don't want to come in there and take away crucial minutes for Boucher, who's been great for them this year. Like Baines, I'm okay with him taking some minutes away from Aaron Baines. That's okay. I'll live with that. Offensively speaking, he has not been good, and like he's been a great screen setter on that, but from an efficiency standpoint he's been pretty horrid, so I wouldn't have a problem with that, but no, you don't want Cousins to come in with the expectation, oh, now I'm gonna get 30 minutes as a Toronto Raptor, you know, Pascal and Fred and Kyle all have to fall in line with me. Like no, he has to come in with some realistic expectations. And also that group is working right now, and I think it's working because all of their primary scorers are guys who can hit the three. I don't think this is talked enough about when you watch Toronto. Their guys are all a threat to shoot the ball. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, you don't want the offense to suddenly switch and be more post-perimeter or post-oriented. That said, what works in DeMarcus Cousins' favor is the fact that he can hit threes as well. So, you know, he has to gauge what kind of role can I have with the Raptors? Can I come in and can I be a part of that whole spacing combination that they have? Should I play like the contrast of being, you know, the interior player that could free everyone else up? Like there are some schemes that you need to figure out before you pull the trigger on it. But I do like the overall idea of adding to that front court.
Yeah, and Boston, which Danny Ainge is openly admitting is not a good roster right now.
Yeah, no, I actually don't like the fit there, to be honest with you. I think they have their sights set on someone a little bit better. You brought up Nikola Vucevic and his numbers earlier. I think he's probably the one you would want if you're Boston via that TPE, and also whatever you can scrap together in terms of draft picks and young players. So I just wouldn't spend time on Cousins as much as I would trying to get either, yeah, Vucevic or even an Aaron Gordon from Orlando.
That is fair.
Oh, by the way, can I plug?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. Well, once again, just I actually made a YouTube video about that yesterday, about five potential TPE targets for the Celtics. That's on the NBA show on YouTube.
Nice. So the only other team that really jumped to mind in terms of potential boogie destinations was the Dallas Mavericks for me, Mort, which leads right into our next big topic. Bleacher Report's Jake Fisher on Tuesday reported the Mavericks have quietly gauged the trade market for Kristaps Porzingis as they have begun reevaluating whether he can truly support Luka Doncic as the second option on a contender. One person with knowledge of Dallas's thinking said they've kicked the tires on everybody on their roster that's not named Luka. They're taking, an assistant general manager said they're taking the temperature because they know at some point it's going to come around. Mark Cuban, team governor, has denied the report, which is no surprise. GMs and team presidents and governors don't tend to come out and off and say, yeah, we're definitely trying to trade this guy. So take that for whatever it's worth. But what do you think of the idea of, we can go back to Boogie if we want to in Dallas, or just the idea of the Mavericks either being willing to shop Porzingis, or like, should they be trying to trade him by the March 25th deadline?
I don't think you should aggressively shop Porzingis in the sense that you're diminishing his trade value. Mm-hmm. Because if you are aggressively shopping a guy, teams will smell that fear, and the offers won't come in to the same extent. Now, I will say that what their entire approach is, which is basically saying Luka is the only untouchable and everyone else is in play, is very, very accurate. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem here for Dallas, and this is something that I really am going to take a look at, I think, for a Forbes article down the line, is they are going to have to wait regardless, because Porzingis is not going to fetch you, a return where Luka is getting that clear-cut number two guy. Right. Porzingis is just too injured. Now, even if Porzingis fetches them draft picks or salary cap relief, the free agent market in 2021, presumably with Kawhi, if we anticipate that Kawhi re-signs in L.A., that's going to be dry as hell. So, again, 2021 is not going to be the year where they'll be getting that secondary guy either. And that's why I kind of think you would want to maybe rehab Porzingis' trade value a little bit. Mm-hmm. If you know you're not going to get that secondary guy this year or next, keep him around. See if you can get him healthy for an extended period of time. Do not aggressively shop him, but do take phone calls. Grow the young core, Tyrell Terry, Josh Green, Tyler Bay. It's Tyler Bay, right? Mm-hmm. I'm getting so old, I'm forgetting the first names of young players. This is where I'm at in my life.
Yeah, it happens. It happens. But yes.
Yeah.
Yes, Tyler Bay.
It's Tyler Bay, right?
Yeah.
All right, great. See, I actually remember that. That's great. and just develop those guys and see what you have in them. Just if just one of those three hit and does so properly, then you suddenly stand on much firmer ground going into 2022 or maybe even a year down the line, like 2023, when a guy like Nikola Vucic, and Nikola Jokic. It's the age. Yeah. It's the age, man. It's going all wrong. Nikola Jokic is going to be a free agent. So I would not aggressively shop Kristaps. I would not put a deadline on it for the March 25th, not at all. That said, if someone does ring me up and I'm getting a Godfather offer for Porzingis, it's something I would have to take into consideration very seriously. Absolutely. Because at the end of the day, this is about Porzingis not being healthy.
Right.
When he's fully healthy and operational, he's pretty good. It's just a question of him being that consistently.
Right. I like how you pivoted from trying to speak Giannis to the Mavericks into existence. Now you've just gone straight to Jokic to the Mavericks.
So full disclosure, I'm actually trying to pivot Jokic to Chicago in 2023 because I think that makes a lot of sense.
Okay.
No, but hear me out. The Chicago has a great Serbian community. You know that. Used to live in Chicago.
That's true.
And additionally, they signed or hired last year Arturis Karnišovas from the Denver Nuggets, and he has a great relationship with Jokic. We've also talked on this podcast ad nauseum that the Nuggets really lost quite a lot of talent over the past year and a half. So if they don't build that asset trove up again at some point soon, I'm just saying a wandering eye might be in Jokic's future. Oh. Who knows?
TJ McBride's never coming on this podcast again if he hears this episode. but no, for Porzingis, I think the big concern, and a number of people have touched on this lately, he just looks like an absolute statue on defense. I mean, it's hard to say whether it's, you know, he's coming back from the knee injury, so he just might not be back in form yet. It sounds like that is at least part of the case. They are ramping him up slowly. They want him to really hit peak form in April, May, heading into the playoffs. But right now, with him on the court, they're allowing an ungodly 119.5 points per 100 possessions. With him off, that drops to 108. So that is a difference of 11.5 points per 100 possessions defensively. The next highest mark on the team is Josh Richardson at a 6.6 point differential. So almost 5-point gap between him and anyone else on the team in terms of on-off splits, worse defensively. So that is obviously not great. And, you know, it's just there's always a concern with a 7'3 guy with a history of lower body injuries. Can this guy stay healthy? He's never played more than 72 games in the season. So, you know, I think you have to just build in. He's going to miss at least 10 to 15 games every year, which you can live with if he gets to the playoffs healthy and can ramp up then, you know, ramp up to high 30s minutes and play every other night then. But can you count on that? That's where I think it gets dicey. So I think you're right in terms of the Mavericks should not declare him untouchable by any means. But I don't, if they are aggressively shopping him, I think that does send the message that we don't believe in this guy either. Like, we don't believe in him ever staying healthy, or we think he's lost a step from this knee injury and he's just not the same player that we thought we were getting when we acquired him 2 years ago. Either way, that sends the message of like, hey, please lowball us, because we are not, you know, we don't expect to get a prospect at 2 first-round picks in return, which is what we sent out to the Knicks to get him.
Yeah.
And I think you're right, too, about the, you know, the free agent market is just going to be tough in terms of finding a star that route. The Mavericks had tried that path for 10 years now, you know, ever since the 2011 championship team. That's kind of what they did, and it has not worked out in their favor yet. It ended with Chandler Parsons, which we all know how that worked. So,
well. So to wrap that up, one thing that's just, I think it's important just to put this into context as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be only free agency, right? Because Luka's only 21.
Right.
You still have time to play the draft game and see if you can get someone in who is young and maybe is a long-term project, sure, but it wouldn't hurt. Like, there's still time left to get him some help, even if it's, you know, one of those Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen situations where Mike had to wait around a couple of years for Scottie to develop. You know, that could still be in play. It's just a matter of what type of player can you get. Like, if the Mavericks decided, you know what, let's pivot. Instead of focusing on free agency this year, let's see if we can ship off some guys for draft picks. You know, maybe we can fetch a top 15 pick for Kristaps. Maybe before the trade deadline, we can ship out Josh Richardson for what will be a late first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're Tim Hardaway Jr. as well. It's like, maybe they go that route as well. If they do, I wouldn't knock it. I wouldn't knock it at all, because then they would understand, you know, we have time with Luka. He's still just so young that we don't have to go all in on 30-year-olds on the free agency market. We can build something for ourselves so we don't stand there with our dicks in our hands every single summer and without getting something, you know, on the free agent market, despite us making several promises to our fan base that we get one.
Right, right. So in Fisher's report, he says Dallas is first interested in adding a center to help supplement Porzingis.
Yeah.
He mentions Andre Drummond as a possible target, but he says Dallas does not want to part with Porzingis in those particular talks. One league source said they want a big to pair with him with physicality, rebounding, toughness. So going back to the DeMarcus Cousins thing for a minute, Do you think that would make sense? Could Boogie be that guy to pair next to Porzingis, or do you think that's just too much injury risk to pair in one front court?
Well, you also said defense. Where's the defense from Boogie?
Yep. I got nothing.
Right. So if you add in Boogie, offensively, I think it could be extremely potent, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I mean, Luka, Porzingis, and Boogie all like spacing for each other and moving around, at least Luka and Porzingis moving around. That could be super interesting. Defensively, it'd be a train wreck.
Yeah.
I mean, I floated this on Twitter, I think, almost a week ago, or 4 or 5 days ago at least, in terms of for Drummond, right? Because of what the Cleveland Cavaliers gave up for him last year when he was with the Pistons. James Johnson, Dwight Powell. And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it was pretty split initially. And then Dallas fans more or less said, now we're good.
Mm.
Which I find interesting. That's where his value is. If that's where Drummond's value is, of course you wouldn't want to give up Porzingis for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if they don't find the center somehow, if they're willing to listen to offers on Porzingis, which teams do you think should be interested? At least reach out, inquire, see what Dallas is willing to take back for him.
Yeah, so that's actually tough because you have to know exactly how to use Porzingis, and you'll also have to take the injuries into consideration.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how do you minimize injuries for Porzingis? Well, one thing is you more or less straight up just make him a shooter, right? I mean, just basically tell him you are not allowed to get into the paint offensively. Like, we can't risk it, and you're a good shooter. So if you go out and you'd launch 12 threes a night, that's fine. You can shoot over virtually everyone. It's okay. We'll live with that. So you have to find a team that's already well-established offensively and that would allow someone like Porzingis to come in and just shoot. But again, then there's the defense, right? You cannot bring him in on that salary and go, well, we'll just have to hide you, while basically being used as a glorified 3-and-D but with no D player. So I'm not sure who needs that.
Yeah, I mean, the problem that we've come across in all of these trade discussions when we're, you know, talking about guys like Drummond, who I'm not, you know, Kristaps, I think, fully healthy, is a much better player than Andre Drummond. But contenders just don't have the type of big dead money deals to, you know, you've got Kristaps at $29.5 million this year, $31.65 million next year, 33.8 in 22-23, and then he has a $36 million player option in 23-24. So matching salaries for him is always going to be the trickiest part of this. And, you know, for teams that are in contention right now, if they have those big salaries, more often than not, those guys are playing important roles and you can't give them up. So, you know, like Boston, it's just always going to come to mind because they have that big trade exception, but Kristaps is about $1 million too expensive to fit into that trade exception. So that they would have to actually match contracts for him, which, you know, makes it a lot more difficult for them to do that. Once I eliminate the top tier teams from that mental exercise, then I jump to that next tier of, we should be better, but we're not right now. So, like, a Miami. Should Miami be willing to part with Tyler Hero and a pick and salary filler for Kristaps, for instance?
I don't know if Tyler Hero is the guy you would want to ship out in that trade. So here's the thing about Tyler Hero, right? I really like him, but I think him as a trade chip over the past year has been... I don't want to say overrated, but to the point where you're seeing Heat fans saying, no, we're not trading Tyler Hero unless we're getting like both Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown back.
Yeah.
Which, like, and look, if the league is at a whole is somewhat in agreement that Tyler Hero is one of these great trade chips that are just, you know, very, very special and doesn't come around a whole lot, then I wouldn't want to burn that on Porzingis. Now, personally, I actually think your suggestion makes sense because I think he's much closer to being in the value range of Porzingis than he is, you know, Jaylen Brown plus Jason Tatum.
Yeah.
But it depends on how teams gauge that trade value for Tyler Hero, I think. If that is legitimate, no, I wouldn't want to burn it on Porzingis. If it's not, then yeah, that could actually be a pretty interesting combination to put on Miami. You would have Jimmy, you would have Bam, and you would have Porzingis as your primary three. I could see a lot of success coming in that, given, of course, that he stay healthy. And then you have to ask yourself, does it really indicate that he would stay healthy in Miami, given how much they work their players to death?
Right. Well, I mean, their medical staff would hopefully keep that in mind, but it's a fair concern. Yeah. A couple West teams came to mind for me as well. Mm-hmm. We talked about Portland a few episodes ago and how they, you know, should they consider, given how well Gary Trent Jr. is playing, given that he's a free agent this summer, restricted free agent, should they be willing to trade CJ McCollum and bolster the front court that way? So, I mean, if it's a CJ for Kristaps trade, Dallas has to send more back, I think. But what about something like that?
And I don't think either team does that.
Interesting. You don't think the Mavericks would do that either?
No, look, again, you have to look at the timeline.
Yeah.
What is CJ, 29?
I'd have to check. But yeah, he's definitely older than Kristaps by a couple of years at least.
Yeah, no, well, it's more Luka I'm thinking about.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah. I just don't think it would make a lot of sense for Dallas to get a secondary guy in there who is practically a decade older than Luka. I understand that Luka already right now is an all NBA player and that he's playing like he's a 15-year vet, and that does negate the need for matching age to the same extent. I get that, but there are also limits. I think you would still want to find someone who is still young enough to be on the upwards trajectory along with Luka, so you don't in 2 or 3 years time have to go, oh shucks, now we have to find a new number two because our current number two has just gotten too old. That's also why I'm pretty much against any Nikola Vucevic trade going to Dallas, because he is actually, you know, going to be 10 years older, at least 9. So that doesn't make sense. I would want someone who is, yeah, just not that much older. I think Porzingis is actually a pretty good player in terms of, or a pretty good age, rather, for Luka, right?
Yeah.
Porzingis is 25. You can find guys of that caliber. They're still young enough to have at least 7 or 8, maybe even 9 good years left. And you're looking at Luka, he's going to have another 15 great years left. So you'd want to capitalize on that. And getting guys in who are in the late 20s, early 30s should just be a no-go.
Okay, I have a couple other ideas. The Warriors have come up, at least in the speculation here. It'd have to be Wiggins plus either Wiseman or the Minnesota pick, most likely. Would you do either of those deals from either side?
So it's Wiggins and Wiseman or Wiggins and the Minnesota pick?
Yeah, I can't imagine the Warriors. They should not have to offer Wiseman and the Minnesota pick.
No, I agree. I'm trying to clarify. It's two different trades,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But both including Wiggins.
Right.
Yeah. So here's the thing, right? The Timberwolves are god-awful.
Mm-hmm.
They're really awful, but that pick likely won't convert until 2022, correct?
Well, so it's top three protected, but even if the Timberwolves finish with the league's worst record, which seems right now they have it by a couple games, there's still like a 50-ish percent chance that they fall to 4 or 5.
Right. My point is it's going to be unprotected the year after, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, you could risk not getting a damn thing this year, and then next year it's fully unprotected.
Well, you'd get Wiggins, but yeah.
Like I said, not a damn thing. I'm kidding. I'm kidding, Warriors fans. Don't kill me. No, but I mean, so obviously Wiggins is not the star of the show here. That's not who you're making this trade for.
Right.
It's either James Wiseman or it's the Minnesota pick. Now, the Minnesota pick does just comes with some hurdles. If it doesn't convert this year, which it might not, then what if the Timberwolves make a great leap next year and that pick turns into something that's just okay?
Right. Yeah.
I don't like that.
That's the risk. Sure.
Yeah, that's problematic for me if I'm Dallas. Now, Wiseman, compared to the Minnesota pick right now, is more of a sure thing. And I realize the absurdity of that, given that he played just 3 college games and has played, what, 20-something games in the NBA?
Yeah, if that.
If that. 21 games. Ha, there you go. But, like, that's a legitimate discussion I would have with my team. What do I believe in here? Do I want to play the odds of the Minnesota Timberwolves providing me with a top, what was it, top 3 protected this year?
Yeah.
Okay. So a top 4 pick this year, which in that case, yes, hell yes, give it to me right now. Or would I risk the Minnesota Timberwolves actually figuring it out next year and then go with Wiseman instead? Like, what's, you have to calibrate those two. I actually like the framework of the deal, but it just has to make sense. And with lottery picks, this is where protection can just get so tricky.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the good thing, if the Warriors and the Mavericks were interested in that framework, neither team needs to be in a huge rush because Wiggins and Porzingis are both under contract for a couple more years. So they could revisit those conversations after the lottery where it's clear, okay, either the Minnesota pick is going to convey this year, it's going to be either 4 or 5 or whatever it ends up being, or
that's a good point.
We know it's not going to convey, and we are trading a completely unprotected pick from one of the most dysfunctional franchises in the NBA.
Yeah. I will say, though, Luka and Wiseman, it wouldn't be not intriguing, right?
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I think if the Mavericks are going to make that deal before March 25th, they would want Wiseman over the pick, I think.
Yeah. Which is why I don't think it's going to happen. Then it's going to be, like you said, it would be after the draft lottery where you know where you're landing. And if the Golden State Warriors were willing to give up Andrew Wiggins and like the number 4th pick for Kristaps Porzingis, oh my God, go for it immediately.
Yeah.
I don't think they will. No. I don't even think they would be willing to give up Wiseman and Wiggins for Porzingis at this point. Do you?
No, I don't think so. I think they really like Wiggins. I don't think it's BS. And I don't. I mean, I know he's viewed as a negative value asset league-wide, which Kristaps, if he can't stay healthy, is rapidly trending toward that as well. So, you might, for both teams, you'd kind of be just saying, we're going to swap these contracts that could age really poorly if these players don't thrive in their new circumstances. But I don't think the Warriors value Wiggins the rest of the league the way the rest of the league does in terms of trade value.
Like I would agree with that. Yes.
So the only, or maybe not the only, but the other team that really came to mind right away, we talk about them pretty much any time a big-name player comes up, the Denver Nuggets. Would you, if you're the Nuggets, be willing to do, would you be willing to include Michael Porter Jr. in Kristaps trade talks?
Oh, man. I had a feeling you would come up with that one. And you know what? I don't know. I don't know. So one thing is I just don't love the fit of Jokic and Porzingis.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't. I would much rather spend the amount of money I'm spending on Porzingis' contract on finding wings for Denver who can just run the court all night long, looking for outlet passes from Jokic. I don't want the slow build up and having two lumbering white guys coming up like 15 seconds later than everyone else. I don't think that matters. Yes, I was joking about the white guys. But I think you would want, like, look, yes, of course you would want a Michael Porter Jr. who, theoretically at least, the theory of him being the player that he could be, you would want that over Porzingis. The question is, do you want to go for the upside, or do you want to take the somewhat sure thing in Porzingis, but you're also, you know, living with potential injuries?
Right.
I don't know. I think I would go with Porter Jr. and stick to it. I just don't see what Porzingis adds that I'm not already getting if I'm Denver.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think some of the teams that will be interested as well will be, again, assuming this deal doesn't go down by March 25th, you'll have a lot of teams potentially interested that just aren't major free agent destinations and that are trying to hit fast forward on their rebuild a little bit. So I'm thinking a team like the Cavaliers, would they be willing to offer, you know, wherever their pick lands up this year, plus Kevin Love for Porzingis?
I absolutely guarantee you they wouldn't.
They would not?
Yeah. How are they accelerating? Like, they're looking to get rid of Andre Drummond, and they're pivoting back into Jared Allen. They made the mistake of going all in last year. Now they're recalibrating. Mm-hmm. I would argue that they are looking at the long term.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess the question for them would be, do Porzingis and Jared Allen fit together long term?
I don't think they do. And I think that's fine. I think what the Cavaliers are doing right now, even if they hadn't resulted in a good season, is still worth the long term play to see what they have there. I just wouldn't do it. There isn't a whole lot of teams out there where I would just jump up and down and go all crazy for Porzingis because of the injuries, the lack of defense. Like, he would have to come a little bit cheap.
Right, right.
And the Dallas Mavericks wouldn't want to give him up for cheap, which I also understand.
Yeah.
Like, I know he came up very briefly on Bulls Twitter as well as, like, you know, Otto Porter and I think Laurie. Mm-hmm. But, like, why would you want to make that commitment? Like, haven't you already... over the past six seasons, the Cavaliers and the Bulls led the league in injuries. And games missed due to injuries. Why would you want to get back into that?
Yeah, and for the Bulls, too, I mean, how does he fit next to Patrick Williams and Wendell Carter Jr., and you're still kind of in evaluation mode with those guys? Does that complicate your ability to decide whether those guys are long-term building blocks?
Right. I mean, that I'm actually not as worried about. To be honest with you, I think he's virtually the same age as Zach LaVine, and I think those two would just basically take care of the offense. It's more the durability and the defensive issues, I think. Mm-hmm. Like we're seeing right now, not just with the Bulls, but with most teams, that one defensive-oriented center is not enough. I mean, that's something we're seeing around the NBA now. You need to have big wings, or you need to have, you know, stretchy forwards who can come in and play like that additional defender role. You're no longer good if you have like one good perimeter defender and one good interior defender. That's just not how you cut it defensively anymore. And Porzingis and guys of his ilk, you know, offensive-minded fours or maybe even fives, where are their roles nowadays? I mean, I really struggle to see that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if Porzingis doesn't have the lateral agility anymore to play anything other than the five, and he's getting roasted in pick and rolls, and, you know, for a big, your defense matters more than it does for a guard, for instance, just because you're the last line of rim protection, what does that mean in terms of can you build a contender around this guy?
Yeah. I mean, that's why I've been banging that drum, Brian, that whole, you know, power forwards are dead.
Yeah.
Because I just think unless you are a very specific type of player nowadays that is very, very multifaceted at the big position, you just can't. You can't survive in that we have the center. He's going to take care of the offense, the defense, and me, the traditional power forward, I'm going to take care of the offense. Like you can't. That's you're a dinosaur if you approach it that way now.
Right.
You have to have a symmetry of both. Much like a defensive-oriented center today, yes, that's all fine and well, but that player is no longer a starter. Like that guy is no longer a 36-minute player, if you catch my drift. Mm-hmm. Like you will still need to be able to dive to the rim. Like if Clint Capela could not catch lobs, what would he be in today's NBA?
Hassan Whiteside?
Or something around that, or at least, you know, it wouldn't be. And Hassan is actually a bad example because that guy can score at a certain level.
Sure.
My point is this: if you're just completely offensively inept from the center position, but you can't defend, yeah, sure, you can get some minutes, but it would be as, you know, as a backup or maybe a third backup. Like it, you wouldn't be a starter. You need to have every talent available now.
Yeah.
Nowadays, the need for being a two-way player, for being a ball mover, for being a ball handler, that has just risen. And that's why we're also seeing that the NBA has never been better from a talent perspective. We have so many guys who can do basically everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Porzingis can't.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think overall, to close out the Porzingis talk, I don't think the Mavericks are going to be in a rush to move him. I think they're going to want to try to rehab his value, as you suggested. I think they'd want more clarity in terms of if we're trying to get draft picks back. They'd want to see how the lottery plays out. Mm. But depending on how the next couple months go, I would not be totally floored if they revisit those talks a bit more seriously heading up to the draft.
Right. There is one team I would bring up in a Porzingis thing, though.
Who?
This team is desperate, Brian, to make the playoffs. And I mean desperate, capital D.
Sacramento?
Yeah. No, I'm not even kidding. Again, I cannot overemphasize how desperate they are to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Would Marvin Bagley, and a combination of Marvin Bagley and Rashawn Holmes be interesting? Marvin never got a fair shake in Sacramento.
Right. I think you would need to include more Sattler. You would have to include like Corey Joseph or something.
Corey Joseph, yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I mean, well, Rashawn, you know, you get his bird rights at least. Because he's an expiring, but...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I'm not saying it's perfect, and I'm also saying the injury concerns are real.
Right.
But if you're Sacramento, do you feel more secure in getting Porzingis in for that package will make you a stronger playoff candidate?
Yeah. Well, and I mean, that's a good way to sell semi-high on Bagley before his value just completely falls off.
Yes, which it will in Sacramento at least. Maybe that value can be rehabbed in Dallas.
Right, next to Luka, yeah.
That's kind of my point.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, full disclosure, Marvin Bagley would not be the secondary guy. So he has actually some of the same issues I just spoke about 2 minutes ago.
Right.
So he would be one of those guys you could actually ship ahead maybe a year down the line or... Oh, well, hell, then he'll be a restricted free agent. He's already in his third year.
Yeah.
But maybe you can pump up his stats. Maybe you can pump up, you know, some value or whatever and then flip him during the summer. Something. Because, again, he's a big, but he's not a defensive-oriented guy. He's not someone who will be so great offensively that he'll just overpower you with offense either.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be a stopgap, but it would be value at least.
Yeah.
And Rashawn Holmes, like, legitimately would make sense.
Yeah,
to have long term in Dallas.
Yeah, no, that's a good pick. But I think teams, there will be no shortage of teams that are willing to express interest in Porzingis. It depends on, like, if Dallas is asking for the moon, that will, you know, if you're asking for even like Drew Holiday-esque package, and this is where we come back to, you know, have have the prices for stars or even near stars gone so through the roof over the last year or two that it's going to become prohibitive to acquire this type of guy, because for a Porzingis in particular, given the downside associated with him, you're not going to want to give up three picks and two pick swaps or whatever the case may be.
Oh, no, that's not in play at all.
Yeah. Like, Dallas would be lucky to get two picks back at this point.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. All right, so let's close out more with the first head coach firing of the season. Ryan Saunders was given the axe on Sunday, I believe, after the Timberwolves blew a big lead against the New York Knicks. Almost immediately after he was fired, news trickled out that the Timberwolves were hiring Chris Finch, who was a Toronto Raptors assistant prior to this. I think it's safe to say there's a lot of raised eyebrows around the NBA about this move, both the timing, bringing in an outside guy, and then particularly, you know, David Vanterpool, who worked previously with the Portland Trailblazers. Damian Lillard is very fond of him. He is currently a Timberwolves assistant, and I think, you know, when you saw the Saunders news trickle out, the immediate reaction was, oh, cool, David Vanterpool is going to be the interim head coach, and he finally gets a shot. And then, like, 5 minutes later, it was, oh, no, they're actually hiring a guy from an outside organization. And, you know, Dame in particular was not happy about that. And Mark Spears of The Undefeated said, he wrote a story, I believe this was yesterday, kind of just like black coaches around the league are just dismayed that another black coach who seemed to be in line for a head coaching gig, or at least interim gig, got passed up for a white guy from an outside organization. So what did you think, Mort, of this whole, you know, hiring process that the Timberwolves went through over the past few days?
Yeah, no, I found that odd. I really did. David Vanterpool was a guy who was brought up for a while, I think, as a head coaching candidate even around the NBA, not just for the Wolves, but like for a lot of teams. He was one of those guys that he was always in the periphery. He was always brought up in conversations. So why would you not, when you get rid of Ryan Saunders, look at him and go, hey, you know what? You're really good. There's a reason that like 10 teams have interviewed you over the past couple of years. Let's see what you got.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I don't have anything else to that. I think I found it weird. I found it like, you know, I don't have a word for it. I just think it's a failure to not do your due process. And I think due process was not being made here. I think when you have a guy who is this well-liked as Vanterpool is, and who certainly has the pedigree to actually get into the door and have those conversations, have those interviews, not giving him at the very least, you know, 10 to 15 games at the helm and testing him out in that role is kind of insulting.
Yeah. I mean, so Gerson Rosas, their team president, addressed this to some extent during the press conference to introduce Chris Finch on Monday. And it's worth noting, Chris Finch and Rosas have a relationship dating back. They were both with Houston with their G League franchise. So it's not like Rosas just plucked Chris Finch out of nowhere. And I don't want to frame this conversation in that Chris Finch is not qualified to be a head coach. I don't know enough about any of these guys either way to say, you know, Chris Finch is going to be a total bust and they're going to regret it. Or like he's going to be the next Greg Popovich and they made the best hire ever. I don't know either way. But yeah, I mean,
no, but Chris Finch was an assistant. We agree with that.
Yeah.
Okay. Then you could have given David Vanterpool the interim tag and then looked for Chris Finch in the summer.
Right.
Like, I just don't think there's a reasonable explanation around that. Like, okay, if you have identified Chris Finch as your guy, you know, who else out there would hire Chris Finch right now?
Right.
Do we know?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you're running the risk that another team fires a coach mid-season and tries to pull the same thing. But if you're, you know, if you're Gerson Rosas, you have a relationship with Chris Finch, you are back channeling, we want you for this gig, but we just don't think the timing is right here. We'll revisit this in the off season, but we are legitimately interested in you. You can kind of like plant the seeds for, this type of a takeover if that's what you really want.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess from Rosas' perspective, it's like, which is better? Should we just get the guy who we know we want now, or should we give Vanterpool his chance, even though we know we're not going to hire him after the season because we're going to go get Chris Finch anyway? Like, is it a legit? Are we giving this guy a legitimate chance to actually, you know, audition for the job?
Here's the thing. How do you know if you want Chris Finch if you haven't seen what David Vanderpool can do as your head coach?
Yeah. Well,
what if you brought Vanderpool on as your lead guy and he just killed it?
Right. Rosas addressed that to some extent. He said, you know, they looked at internal options such as Vanderpool and Pablo Prigioni, but they were realistic in terms of their league standing. They didn't feel they could get real change they needed without being, quote, bold and direct with this opportunity. And this is a direct quote from him. He says, "With Chris, we have a guy here who we share a vision, we share a philosophy, and feel very confident about his ability to impact this team. And unfortunately, with our struggles here over the last year and a half, the ability to change that narrative was going to be hard from an internal perspective." So it basically makes it seem like Rosas is saying, because these guys have been on the staff and we've been so damn bad, even though injuries are a large part of why they have been as bad as they are, you know, we needed to have someone come from outside of the organization to give us kind of a fresh perspective.
Yeah, it couldn't be anything to do with the roster construction at all.
Right.
It couldn't be the fact that you keep having like 16 million wings, but not one of them can play a two-way game, right? Couldn't be any part of responsibility put on the management's shoulders, right? No. It has to go through the coach, because the coach is always the guy who has to go first through the whole sacrifice machine. Oh, yeah, I get it.
Right.
I get it. I think that's ridiculous. I think that's just pointing the finger elsewhere.
Yeah. No, like, who's the one who decided to trade a top three protected pick and Andrew Wiggins for D'Angelo Russell, knowing full well D'Angelo Russell and Karl-Anthony Towns are going to hemorrhage 130 points a game?
Right. I mean, yeah, this was done to retain, Towns to some extent, but he had already signed.
Right.
So, I mean, look, when it comes to the Timberwolves, I'm just out.
Yeah.
And I have been for a while. I don't think there's a lot of logic in what they're doing. I don't think they're exciting to watch. I think their internal structure is weird and messy, unnecessarily so. You know, this is just another item. I had a lot of hope for Rosas when he joined in. So far, and like everyone raved about him, and so far I'm not really impressed. I got to be honest with you, I'm not.
Yeah, I mean, so that begs the question, regardless of whether they hired Finch, Vanterpool, whoever, could any, like, how do any of these guys dig the Timberwolves out from where they are right now?
With the roster that they have, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. You got to be creative. You absolutely got to be creative, but I'm not ruling out that someone out there, if it's Chris Finch, David Vanderpool, or even a third guy, can come in and go, or woman for that matter, by the way, let's not forget about that, it could come in and say, you know what, let's shake things up. Because they're very traditional in wings and guards and all that. Before I've mentioned, like, let's see Jared Culver and power forward, and we have seen a little bit of that, but maybe just shake the bag up and go, guys who can't produce offensively, you're not gonna play. Because if our main guys aren't great defenders, and Lord knows that they aren't, then our only alternative is to come out and effing give you 140 per game.
Yeah.
Maybe something along those lines, instead of always trying to, oh yeah, now we've scored 43 points in one quarter, let's put in the bench who are great defensive players but can't make a bucket to save their lives. Like, what are you trying to do there? Like, it's the roster construction is messed up, so you would need to have someone who thinks, you know, outside the box. Is Chris Finch that guy? Maybe. Could David Vanderpool have been that guy? Maybe. We won't know.
Yeah. Right. I mean, again, I don't know enough about each individual candidate to evaluate how good or bad they would have been. But I agree with you that the process of hiring Finch mid-season without interviewing anyone else, it just feels gross. It feels it, just optically, it looks bad.
Correct.
For the Timberwolves. I will say
it's the Tom Thibodeau Fred Hoiberg situation a little bit over again.
Yeah, yeah. Or like, you know, when the Hinkie stepped down and Brian Colangelo took over 4 days later, oh, even though they
that was icky.
Yeah,
that was super icky.
Right. Yeah. Right. Our friend of the podcast, Nikias Duncan, who writes for Basketball News, did have a good piece that went up like yesterday or the day before on kind of where they go next. He's basically saying, you know, they have to turn Karl Anthony Towns into their version of Jokic, just play through him even more, which I think would be awesome. And so I'm intrigued to see how Finch does. I mean, they play their first game yesterday. It just got their brains absolutely beaten in by the Milwaukee Bucks. So it's early returns are not great, but I'm not going to say he's a bust after only one game.
No. And we shouldn't trash on Finch, even though I still think that you could put some of it on Finch by agreeing to this whole process. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's without any level of responsibility here. But at the same time, you also have to recognize if you're an assistant coach, you're always looking to get that head coach position. Right. And if someone offers it to you, most people would say, okay, because it's a dog-eat-dog world.
Right.
That said, it's just, like you said, it's the optics, right?
Yeah.
It's solely the optics. He might be a tremendous coach for the Timberwolves. We have no idea. But given how it started, it's just, it's not pretty.
Yeah, it's not great. Well, Mort, I think that is a good place for us to wrap up. So thank you, as always, for listening in. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And thanks for listening to our live show on Locker Room. If you liked our show, please be sure to start your own room and engage with other fans on the app. Download the Locker Room app in the Apple App Store to be a part of our podcast. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, man. Don't die.